Barry is a New York Times bestselling author with 15 million books in print. Barry has a passion for history, which he explores in his popular Cotton Malone adventures. He and his wife have created the History Matters Foundation, dedicated to historic preservation. Through lectures, galas, and writers' workshops, Steve crisscrosses the country to raise funds and awareness to save endangered historic treasures. Last year, the American Library Association named Steve their first spokesman for National Preservation Week. Today, we'll speak with Steve about his newest title, The King's Deception. Welcome, Steve. It's great to have you back with us on the Book Report.
Great to be back.
The King's Deception has a secret at its core that could rock England's monarchy. Give our listeners an overview.
Well, I have to be careful here because I don't want to give away something really cool in the book because it is really something very interesting. Elizabeth and I were in a little village north of London a few years ago doing some publicity work for the British publisher, and a lady there started telling me about this local legend. It was a legend that dealt with the Tudors and with Elizabeth I, and it had been around 400 years. And as I began to research the legend, I began to realize that there was more truth to it than I first thought. And as I looked into it more and more, it became clear that not only the legend may be not a legend, but it could actually be true. So I fashioned the novel, The King's Deception, all around that. I wish I could tell you what it was, but it would give away the whole book, and I don't want to spoil it for the readers. I can only tell you that it's very shocking, it's very surprising, but it's also very logical, and it makes a lot of sense, too.
Okay, well, I've read the book, and I loved it, and I know this little town is called the town of Bisley. And so the parade that you talk about, which I won't give it away either, it actually happens. Is that correct?
Yes, that parade happens each year. They do it, and there's a peculiar little twist that happens in that parade, and it got a lot of people wondering, why does that happen? Why does that occur? What is it? What's going on there? And so that's why it got my interest up, and it ended up becoming the novel.
All right. For those of us readers who haven't met him yet, introduce us to Cotton Malone.
He's a retired Justice Department agent. He lives in Copenhagen now. He owns an old bookshop there. And he gets himself into trouble all the time. He just can't seem to stay out of his former profession. And in this particular adventure, it deals with his son, Gary, his 16-year-old son. He has a very interesting relationship with Gary. There's some unresolved issues there with Gary, and these are all going to get resolved in The King's Deception. So it's really a father-son story, as much as it is action, history, secrets, conspiracy, and international set.
Okay, speaking of father and son, I know that William Cecil and his son Robert Cecil are very important characters in this book. Talk a little about them.
The Cecils were the brains behind the later Tudor monarchs. William Cecil himself was Elizabeth's Secretary of State, which we would call today the Prime Minister, her chief aide, basically. He was the brains behind it all. He made it all happen. He was the reason why she could rule so effectively. He was an excellent, excellent administrator and a very clever and skilled statesman. When he died in the late 16th century, his son took over, and his son assured the switch from Elizabeth I to James I. He kept everything running smoothly. These were very skilled men who knew what they were doing, and they formed the heart of this story because they're at the center of the secret that centers around Elizabeth I, and these two are vital to that. And it was interesting to learn about them. I mean, Robert was particularly interesting. He was kind of deformed. He had a hunched back. He was not a very attractive man, yet he was this great statesman and great ladies' man and great everything. But he ultimately crashed and burned. He actually ultimately lost all power before he died.
Hmm. You write about Henry Fitzroy, who was the illegitimate firstborn son of Henry VIII. He was an actual historical figure, is that right?
That is correct. Henry had an illegitimate son while he was married to Catherine of Aragon, his first wife, and that's what got him so angry at Catherine. Catherine kept miscarrying, and then she had a daughter that she gave birth to that became Mary. She could not give birth to a son, yet he gave birth to a son with his mistress. And so it convinced him that there was nothing wrong with him, that he was not the problem. The problem was his wife, and that's one reason why he got intent on getting rid of her. Fitzroy is a term term that is used and given to the illegitimate children of a monarch. They get the last name of Fitzroy. So if you ever see that in a history book, you know what's going on there. And he loved Henry Fitzroy. He was, in fact, if he had not had ultimately had a male son, or even worse, Henry died at a very young age. If Henry had survived past 16, and Henry VIII had not had his own son, some say that we might have had Henry the Ninth in Henry Fitzroy.
Hmm.
Even though he was illegitimate, Henry was laying the groundwork with that in Parliament. But ultimately, Henry Fitzroy died at the age of 16. But that still figures into this story very prominently, because Henry Fitzroy has a lot to do with the secret involving the Tudors.
Right. Now, you talk about Bram Stoker's book, A Famous Impostors. Talk about that for a bit.
That is the very first written account of what we call the Bisley Boy legend, which forms, you know, the basis of this story. And the Bisley Boy legend was first detailed in Bram Stoker's book. And Stoker published that book in 1910. He stumbled across the legend just like I stumbled across the legend. I didn't know he had done that till after I learned about it and I found out about Stoker's book. So there's an excerpt of Stoker's book included in the novel to show you just how on point he was.
Hmm. Elizabeth died when she was 70, yet she was buried with her half-sister Mary. How many years had separated their death?
About 45, maybe. Elizabeth reigned, I believe, 45 years, so there was quite a while. Mary had been in the grave a long time when they put Elizabeth in there with her. Extremely unusual to bury two queens in the same tomb, and it all also figures into the legend and figures into the great secret that we're dealing with in here, that is actually true, that these two women were buried together.
Elizabeth was such a towering figure. How was she not laid to rest in her own tomb?
Well, that's an excellent question. Robert Cecil survived Elizabeth, and Robert Cecil was in charge of her burial. And he chose to bury Elizabeth and Mary together. Now, in actual history, we have no explanation for that. There is no explanation for that given anywhere. But when you start studying the legend and the secret that I'm dealing with in this book, then it begins to make perfect sense why Robert Cecil did that and why he decided to intermix and mingle their bones together. It makes perfect sense, but in actual reality, we don't have an explanation.
Huh. How much time did you spend researching this story before you began writing?
Well, 6 months of preliminary research before I start writing. I do that with any novel. And then it was 12 months of additional research while I was writing. So it was an 18-month process from start to finish.
Hmm. Tell our readers about your insider information about Elizabeth's portraits and how she didn't allow herself to age in them.
Yes, in history notes her as a very vain person, and that she was very careful about her appearance. Now, there's some other explanations as to why that may have occurred that we explore in the novel. But finally, in the 1590, a decree was issued that it would be called the Mask of Youth. And from this point forward, her face would appear like this. And they fashioned a face. And if you will look at the portraits of Elizabeth from around 1570 forward to about to the time of her death in 1603, you will see that the face of Elizabeth is pretty much identical in every one of them, even though she's a very elderly woman in most of those. The portrait that really figures into the novel, the rainbow portrait, if you'll look at that, she looks like a woman of about 30 or 40 in there, but in actuality she was 70 years old when that was painted. She was actually dead when it was finished. So she decreed that she would be forever young. So we really have no idea what Elizabeth actually looks like. And there are only a handful of drawings of what she looked like prior to the age of 35.
Hmm. Well, this is a story about a very complex mystery, and I just loved it. What's your next project?
Cotton Malone, another Cotton Malone adventure. He'll be coming back to America for a very interesting story that's going to deal with Abraham Lincoln.
All right. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to that. Steve, thanks so much for joining us today. This is a really great read.
I appreciate it so much. I hope everyone enjoys it.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.